I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together, we're Roman Oz. Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, allaussieradio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, I think we start off at the Man from Snowy River Museum in Corryong, don't we?
Yes, you're going to chat to John Whitehead.
And he's an extremely knowledgeable chap.
He is,
and he's
yes.
90 years of age. Can you believe how sprightly and
yes, I know.
Oh, my goodness me. I look at this man and think, 90 years of age.
Yeah.
He's like, old enough to be my father. There's hope for me yet.
Too true.
Now, wasn't Corryong a lovely town?
Yes, it was.
Absolutely.
Lovely.
Fabulous place. And Snowy River Museum, folks, if you're interested in anything to do with Snowy River Country and the museum.
And
got
the
to
man
get you,
from Snowy River.
And the
yeah.
man in particular, the yep. man from Snowy River. They've got the cottage and everything yes, built there, the, don't they, out
yes,
the back?
They do.
Absolutely. Well
and
worth.
Old police station and everything. Yeah.
yeah well worth the look.
Yeah.
Then straight after that, Lynn, you don't often talk on the radio,
no.
but you're actually going to be telling everybody about the High Country Rail Trail.
That's correct, yes.
And wasn't that a lovely walk?
Yes, it was. Okay. We walked it. We didn't bike it.
We didn't push bike it, no.
No, we don't
we
have
walked
bikes.
It. So what's on after that?
Then you're going to be speaking to Jenny Boardman and she's talking about the Man from Snowy River Bush Festival.
Fabulous festival. That's been running a couple of years. Boy,
yes.
if you want to go to that one, you've got to book a year in advance, I think.
Mm.
Extremely busy, that one. And then after that, we finish up with our last two people.
Anna and Rob.
They what a lovely couple.
Yes.
Goodness me.
They even invited us for dinner.
He invited us in for dinner. And you know what he reminds me of?
Who?
Santa Claus.
Oh.
He looks just like Santa. What a lovely
yep.
person. And Anna,
yep.
bit of a Marilyn Monroe
yes.
lookalike there. Yeah. Wow, what a couple they were.
Yeah, they're full-time living on the road.
Absolutely.
So, and we met them at Copeton Dam.
Near Inverell.
Yes,
about 17 k's out of
yes,
Inverell.
And it was a bit chilly out yeah, there.
Very, very chilly indeed. Well, look, let's get on with it. Apart from all these wonderful chats, we've also got a great selection of music as requested by the people we interview. So, Lynn, what do you think? On with the show.
Oh, welcome, listeners. I'm Phil C, and yes, we're still roaming Oz. I'm actually in Corryong with John Whitehead at the Man from Snowy River Museum. How are you this morning, John?
Okay.
Okay. Hey, look, I've got to tell you, you're a 90-year-old gentleman, and you're looking very sprightly for your age. How long have you been with the museum?
How long have I been with it? Well, I was president for 31 years and I put in several years before that.
Okay, and I understand you've only just stepped down to vice president about a month ago.
Yes.
Okay, well that's fantastic that you've put so much time into something so wonderful. Tell us a few things for the listeners about this wonderful museum of yours here in Corryong.
Yes, as you walk in, we'll be with the Man from Snowy River Museum.
Mm-hmm.
We have some of Jack Riley's regalia, his saddlebag and watch,
yes.
etc. That's about the first thing you see when you come through the door.
Okay.
And then we turn and there is Jim Simpson's rug.
Now tell us about that rug, Jim, because that's... John, because that is really impressive, that rug. Tell us a little bit about that, the history of that.
Well, it's a 6-foot square map of Australia knitted by Jim when he was a prisoner of war in Stalag 4B in Germany.
Right.
And knitted from memory because I don't think the Germans would have had a map for him.
Definitely not, unless they were going to use it against us. So he knitted this magnificent rug. Whilst he was a prisoner of war, how long would it have taken him to make that, do you think? Because it's a huge rug.
Yeah, well, I believe it took him about 18 months to gather all the bits of wool together. Some of them are only about a foot long, and if they were too worn, he'd roll two or three together to get the ply he wanted.
Right.
And serve for colours. Mm-hmm. And he's got the coats of arms of each state on it too.
Yes.
And very thankful to a Canadian chap that was shot down. He had new hockey socks on and had all the colours he wanted in them, and he gave him about 50 cigarettes and knitted him another pair of socks to get those for the colour.
Fantastic. And the thing is, it's so intricate in its detail. He's even got the mountain ranges, and he's got the reef on this rump.
Yes, and he didn't forget Tassie.
No, he didn't. He didn't forget Tasmania as well. All the little islands out off Tasmania. Yes. He's even got those on there.
He even got a little red dot on it for Corryong, and Lake Eyre was full of water too, by the look of it.
Okay. Now, I understand that they wanted to steal this rug and take it to Canberra. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it's got a story of its own, that rug.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the rug.
Right from the start.
Yep.
Yeah, well, when the Russians released them from the prisoner of war camp, mm-hmm. they had to, they just opened the gates and let them go, and they had to work their own way across Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Jim was actually out of camp when the Russians got there because the Germans had left.
Yes.
But taken all the tucker with them.
Right.
So he was out trying to scrounge something for them to eat.
Okay.
One of his mates grabbed the blanket and then gave it to him when he caught up to them down the track.
Okay.
When they got to the river where the Americans were on the other side, the Russian guards and the American guards weren't letting anyone across the river.
Right.
The Russian guards said to the Americans, he said, "I know these men."
Right, yeah.
He said, "I was in the prison camp next to them, and whenever we ran out of food, they gave us food. Let them through."
Okay. Okay, now I understand. Now, that was great. They let them through. And I also understand that when they were ready to fly them back home, he wasn't going to leave without his rug. Is that correct?
That's right.
So he said, "If I can't take my rug, I'm not going. I'm going to walk."
Yeah, going to keep walking.
Okay. And they obviously took him because he's still got his rug, and it's here at this beautiful Man from Snowy River Museum.
And the American let him take the rug on the train plane because his wife was a knitter, and Jim had to take it.
Okay, fantastic. Now, what else can our listeners expect to see here at the museum? You've got, I understand, out the back, you're working on an actual replica of the original Man from Snowy River hut.
Yes. We have photos taken in about 1904 with Jack Riley at the door of his hut, so we've been able to scale the hut from that.
Yes.
And yes, we're using all traditional equipment.
That was the thing that amazed me. Traditional equipment, and it's all done by volunteers. Yes. It's not quite finished yet, but hopefully you're going to have that done very soon.
No, well, we've been spitting some of the shingles and that during some of the festivals, and that creates a lot of interest.
Okay.
With the visitors too.
Okay.
To see the shingle splitters.
Now, what else can we see? Like, where are we standing right now in this particular room? What's the display here, John?
The display here is all cameras, going right back to the old glass plate cameras.
Okay.
And sporting equipment. Here's hospital section here.
Mm-hmm.
Including a few things that people really take one look at and walk past. They bring back memories.
Okay. Yeah. So horror stories for some, I suppose. I can see we've got an original dental chair over there, Dr. George.
Yeah. And the old-fashioned drill.
Yes, I'm not a fan of dentistry, so come here, and if you have some flashbacks, we're not trying to scare you about the museum.
No, just through the door there is
some ski equipment, yeah, there's a whole section of that.
A whole collection of skis.
Uh-huh.
Here, some years ago, we were approached, would we let them send our ski collection to an exhibition in New Orleans in America.
Right.
We said, no, we don't do that sort of thing here.
Yep.
A couple of days later, we get a phone call from Canberra. This is Bob Hawke talking.
Okay.
We want those skis to go to America.
Right.
So what else could you do?
Exactly. What could you say to the man?
So we sent half the skis to America, the left ones only, not the right ones.
Okay. Okay.
And they all came back.
They all came back. That was very clever planning there on your behalf, no doubt, John.
Yeah.
So is there anything else of interest here that you think that the listeners might like to come and see? You've got some magnificent, magnificent things here. Really impressive.
Oh, yes. Well, in the shed out the back, we have all the old printing equipment that our local paper was printed on up until about 20 years ago.
Right.
And I don't know how heavy that press is, but a 20-ton jack will just lift one end of it at a time.
Okay.
It happens to be in our shed.
That's it, in your shed. And you've also got a section there of uniforms from some of the local lads that gave their lives or that passed later on in life when they come back from the war. The actual uniforms. And
yes, well, one is Air Commodore Gearing, and that's about as high as you can get.
That's it. That's it. Yes. All right, John. Well, I think that's just about covered it for our listeners. I really appreciate your time.
And also up in the shed, there's a lot of all the old hand tools, axes, adzes, hand saws.
Okay.
And all that sort of stuff.
That sort of stuff they would have used to build their huts and cottages.
And Farming machinery.
So, listeners, there's a lot to see here. I must tell you, I've seen a lot of museums in small towns. This one's extremely impressive, John. And I've got to thank you for taking so much time to talk with us. That rug in itself, in that glass cabinet, if you're interested in anything like that, war memorabilia, this is definitely a place to not miss when you come through Corryong. Now, I'm going to play you a song, John. Have you got anything special that comes to mind?
Oh,
it's got to be Australian.
How about Slim Dusty and the man from Snowy River?
Ah, good on you, John. You're a man of my heart. All right, listeners, you stay around for The Man from Snowy River by Slim Dusty. And thank you so much, John Whitehead, and he's the Vice President here at The Man from Snowy River Museum here in Corryong. And we're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after Slim Dusty.
There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away and had joined the Wild Bush Horses. He was worth £1,000, so all the cracks had gathered to the fray. All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight. For the bushmen love hard riding where the wild bush horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight. There was Harrison, who made his pile when Pardon won the cup, and the old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could ride beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse or man could go. And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand. No better horseman ever held the reins, for never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. And he learned to ride while droving on the plains. And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast. He was something like a racehorse undersized, with a touch of time or pony, three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread, and he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. But still so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay, and the old man said, "That horse will never do. For a long and tiring gallop, lad, you'd better stop away. Those hills are far too rough for such as you." So he waited sad and wistful. Lonely Clancy stood his friend. "Oh, I think we ought to let him come," he said. "And I warrant he'll be with us when he's wanted at the end, for both his horse and he are mountain bred. Oh, he hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side.
where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hooves strike firelight from the Flintstones every stride, and the man that holds his own is good enough. And the snowy river riders on the mountains make their home, where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but no way yet such horsemen have I seen. So he went, they found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow. And the old man gave his orders, boys, go at 'em from the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them, try and wheel them to the right. And ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills. For never yet was rider that could keep that mob in sight if once they gained the shelter of those hills. So Clancy rode to wheel them, he was racing on the wing, where the best and boldest riders take their place. And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with his stock whip as he met them face to face. Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but they saw their well-beloved mountain full in view. And they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew. Then fast the horsemen followed where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread. And the stock whips woke the echoes and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead. And upward, ever upward, the wild horses held their way where Currajong and Mountain Ash grew wide. And the old man muttered fiercely, we may bid the mob good day. No man could hold them down the other side. When they reached the mountain summit, even Clancy took a pull. It well might make the boldest hold their breath. The wild hop scrub grew thickly and the hidden ground was full of wombat holes, and any slip was death. But the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head, and he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer. And he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed, while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the Flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet. Oh, he cleared the fallen timber in his stride. And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat. It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride through the stringy box and saplings on the rough and broken ground. Down the hillside at a racing pace he went, and he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of the terrible descent. He was right among the horses as they climbed the farther hill, and the watchers on the mountain standing mute saw him ply the stock whip fiercely. He was right among them still as he raced across the clearing in pursuit. Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges. Oh, but a final glimpse reveals on a dim and distant hillside the wild horses racing yet with the man from Snowy River at their heels. And he ran them single-handed till their sides were white with foam. He followed like a bloodhound on their track till they halted, cowed and beaten. Then he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back. But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur, but his pluck was still undaunted and his courage fiery hot. For never yet was mountain horse a cur. And down by Kosciuszko, where the pine-clad ridges raise their torn and rugged battlements on high, where the air is clear as crystal and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky, and where around the overflow the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes and the rolling plains are wide. Oh, the man from Snowy River is a household word today,
and stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride.
And gee, Phil, wasn't John Whitehead a wealth of information?
Exactly. And 90 years of age. Unbelievable.
I know. I hope I'm that good at that age.
Oh, listen, I think so too. If I was that sprightly at his age, I'd be a happy man. Now, Lynn, what are we going to talk about next?
We're going to do the High Country Rail Trail. Now, this trail hugs the shoreline of Lake Hume from Wodonga to Old Talangata and then continues on to Corryong. The old railway line was built back in 1887 and was used to transport material for the Snowy Mountains scheme. The last train headed out along this track back in 1978. The scenic ride takes in magnificent lake and mountain views with railway and immigration history along the way. There are magnificent mountain views, historical sites and the cool waters of Lake Hume to enjoy along the 35-kilometre trail from Wodonga to Old Talangata. From Old Talangata to Corryong, the trail takes 74 kilometres and takes you through pine plantations, state forest, historic timber trestle bridges and mountain views.
Oh, Lynn, I can hear a song coming on.
Have you got the Pushbike Song by the Mixtures?
Of course I've got the Pushbike Song by the Mixtures. Is that what you'd like to hear, Lynn?
Well, we've just been talking about bikes, so let's get on our bike and go.
All right, listeners, you stick around. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after the Mixtures, the Pushbike Song.
Pushbike, honey, when I noticed you riding downtown in a hurry, honey, down South Avenue. You look so pretty as you were riding along. You look so pretty as you were singing this song. I tried catching up, but you were pedaling harder too. Riding along like a hurricane, honey, spinning out of you. You look so pretty as you were riding along. You look so pretty as you were singing this song. I sing the song. Round, round, wheels going round, round, round. Down, up, pedals, down, up, down. But I gotta get across to the other side of town before the sun.
Pushbike Song by the Mixtures. Geez, that's a good song, Lynn.
Yes, I thought you'd enjoy that, Phil.
Well, we haven't heard it for a while.
No, that's for sure. Now, you're going to head on down and see Jenny Boardman, and she's from the Man from Snowy River Festival.
If you've just joined us, I'm Phil C, and this is Roman Oz, and I am with Jenny Boardman, the General Manager for the Man from Snowy River Bush Festival. How are you today, Jenny?
Going well, thank you.
That's great. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. Just want to get some background information. First of all, on yourself, how long have you been associated with the Man from Snowy River Bush Festival?
Back in 1995, we were approached by historian Jonathan King, who came to town wanting to do a centenary celebration of the publication of the poem.
Okay.
And from that, he wanted to put together a horse event that reflected the poem and what horse people in the bush thought of the poem. So we created the Man from Snowy River Challenge event, which consists of six or seven small events, and the top scores out of those go into the finals. And it never had been done anywhere before, and we put it together, and we've sort of been running that event ever since.
So. Wow, so it's been going for quite a while now. But I understand that some other places are trying to replicate what you guys do, is that right?
Yeah, it's created such a growth industry, I suppose. When you go back to those early days, very few people knew how to pack a pack horse, if they even knew what one was.
Right.
How to shoe their own horse. They all got farriers in. It's a requirement of this event that as a good horseman, good bushman of the day would have known how to do all of those things and mm-hmm. be able to survive in the bush, to be able to muster cattle, have a good working dog, be able to ride a rough horse, also catching brumbies, of course, which yep. was almost a part of their lifestyle back in the day. And
right.
so we, by creating this event, we have brought a lot of that history back to life, but also at schools. And now we've got kids from as young as 7 year old, learning the tricks of the trade in that sort of thing. So we run events now. There's copy events in Gundagai, South Australia, Western Australia. So there's two or three in New South Wales now. So it's mm-hmm. certainly sort of something that's very, we're very pleased and proud to be part of it. And
fantastic.
A great reflection on our history.
Fantastic. Now, how long does the festival go for? When does it start?
It runs Thursday to Sunday every year, usually around Easter.
Uh-huh.
So we aim for roughly the first weekend in April every year, but subject to where Easter falls, we're either before or after it.
Okay.
And over the 4 days, we have a very diverse program. It's not just horses. We have working cattle dog events. We have an art show, bush poetry, music. There's a talent quest, street parade. We actually do the reenactment of the poem, which is another standalone event. It's extremely popular, and it just came about by a couple of our local horsemen wanting to have a bit of fun. So mm-hmm. they said, let's run some horses. So we've choreographed now an event that attracts probably 6,000 people over the weekend just to go out and watch that. And you see some incredible action, and it looks just fantastic in the bush setting.
Fantastic. Now, 6,000 people, that would obviously bring a lot of revenue, a lot of income into the town, but where do you house them all? You couldn't possibly have 6,000 people here at one time.
No, that's very true. It's a BYO accommodation scenario, so mm-hmm. we are very fortunate to have our rec reserve in Corryong is surrounded by the golf course, which is part of that rec reserve. And we fit in over 1,000 campers on that golf course. We also now have grown enough that we've got another paddock adjacent to the golf course where we fit in up to another 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
Also to the competitors, of course, they've got to have a paddock separate from the general public for their horse camps and that type of thing. So she's a busy little town over the festival weekend.
Right.
We think
yes.
we get up to probably 7,500 people a day through the gates.
7,500 people a day.
Mm.
Wow, that's huge. That's bustling. I mean,
when you think the population of Corryong is about 1,200.
I was going to say, it's a tiny town. It's a beautiful town, and there's a lot to see here, but that must be a real shock. And, of course, a real blessing too, I guess, for the local people here that would be really looking forward to those sort of people coming through.
Well, events like this don't just run by themselves,
no.
as you'd be aware, and so we rely heavily on a volunteer base. And so the local community via all of the various clubs, they provide all of their volunteers, so it's then they earn income, which is then turned back into the community. So it's very much a community run event,
mm-hmm.
and it's a not-for-profit organisation, so it's run by a board of volunteers as well. There's a staff here of about three or four people year round that put it all together. But without those volunteers, we don't have a show.
It couldn't exist, I guess.
And, it's an amazing community, because probably the strongest feedback we get every year as what an incredible time they've had and how friendly and helpful the volunteers and the locals are. So that's a tremendous compliment.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I'm just hoping that everything goes well for us with the situation. Last year it was all cancelled, so I guess people that had all their tickets from last year, they'll be right to come back this year. And we're not sure yet as to whether or not we're going to be able to sell more, but you still would have a lot of people from last year, no doubt.
Oh, yes. Our supporters are amazing. You know, you get on Facebook and you see, you know, somebody might have a grumble, but there'll be five or six people. We don't have to argue our case. You know, we've got so many people that, you know, support what we're doing, understand the struggle that we're having to try and get this thing on the ground. So, they're the reason why you keep on battling, trying to get it across the line. So we're pretty confident now,
yes,
touch wood and cross fingers, that that's going to happen this time round. But
brilliant.
There's always another year, and we'll be here to keep it going. Keep on keeping on.
So you have do you regularly have people from past year that regularly book every year, or is it just a one-off experience?
We've got many, many people that, you know, they'll tell you the story. You know, I came back in 1995, and now my son and his family and, you know, they come year after year, and it's quite a family in itself. And the grey nomad population, you can be anywhere in Australia and around a campfire or a caravan park, and somebody will be talking about, you know, sort of the run down to Victoria and make sure the festival, go and see that festival.
The Man from Snowy River Festival, yeah, yes. Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, I'll be missing it this year, Jenny, but fingers crossed, I will definitely be here next year. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Jenny.
You're very welcome.
Really great. Now, I'm going to play you an Aussie song. I always play a song after the chat. And who's your favourite? Anyone in particular?
Well, based on my mother's love for this guy, who is Slim Dusty, and, you know, the current circumstances, people would probably appreciate there's a song that Slim does about old riders in the grandstand. So I think that reflects the festival and our ethos and where we're at the moment. So
fantastic.
Slim on.
All right, let's play Slim Dusty's, what was it again,
Old Riders in the Grandstand.
Thank you so much, Jenny Boardman, and she's the general manager of the Man from Snowy River Bush Festival. Stick around, listeners. After this track, we'll be back with more Roman Oz.
I'm seated in the grandstand at a big-time rodeo, with my walking stick beside me as I watch the scene below. There are young'uns riding outlaws as I did when young and free, and I wonder, are there many old ex-riders here like me? The horses they are riding couldn't buck to save their hide. Oh, I'd like to see these young'uns on the ones I used to ride. I've used the likes of Spinifex for a night horse on the run, and Brahma bulls like Wadjera, we rode them just for fun. Saddles they are using are designed to hold you in, and the halter shanks are silky so as not to hurt your skin. We rode in flattened polies in the days of long ago, and could have rolled a smoke aboard the likes of Curio. The steers they use for dogging are no bigger than a calf, and the time they take to throw them make us old-timers laugh. We used to scruff big mickeys twice the size in cattle yards. Oh, but that was many years ago, way back when times were hard. These young'uns dress so leery in their fancy cowboy suits. We used to ride in moleskins and a pair of blucher boots. For all our glory's vanished, we're forgotten men it seems. Old riders in the grandstand, alone with all our dreams.
Well,
What a great song, listeners. Old Riders in the Grandstand by the old Grand Slim Dusty himself. I'm going to play you one more song, folks, before our last two guests come up to join us. And the song I've selected is a song by Errol Grey. Now, he is a comedic country singer. And the song we've selected is a number called Backin' in the Van.
If you want to see fireworks between a woman and a man, get on down to the caravan park. They're backing in the van, backing in the van, backing in the van. The true test of a marriage is backing in the van. The wife's yelling directions only she can understand. Standing out of sight down behind the caravan, she's waving her arms all around as if she's shooing flies. He'd like to tell her where to go, but it would be unwise. Backing in the van, backing in the van. The true test of a marriage is backing in the van. Now left hand down, right hand down can get downright confusing, especially with an audience who'd find it quite amusing. After 15 goes, poor old hubby doesn't know where he's at. He tries to straighten up and backs over the water tap. Now Neville, a know-it-all, has suddenly appeared. He's offering advice that hubby doesn't want to hear. Poor hubby's shaping up to Niv, for I think he's lost the plot. The wife has had enough and whacks hubby across the chops. We're backing in the van, backing in the van. The true test of a marriage is backing in the van. Now walkie-talkies and mobile phones are great reversing aids, and cameras are popular with the grey nomad brigade. Some couples work together in joyous marital bliss, but for some it ends in tears, fights and hissy fits. Backing in the van, backing in the van. The true test of a marriage is backing in the van.
Welcome back to the show, listeners. My name is Phil C. This is Roman Oz on allaussieradio.com.au, now syndicated to 97.7 Tasman FM and 87.6 Backwater Country. And I am talking to two permanent full-time travellers, Anna and Rob. How are you both going?
We're just fantastic.
I'm old, but I'm doing well.
You look sensational. You look a bit like Santa Claus, Rob.
I could say the same for you.
Yes, most people call me Santa Claus. What about you, Anne? What's your secret? You look a bit like Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, I do.
This is going to be fun, I can tell. Now, you're both full-time travellers. You're married. You've been married now for how long, Anne?
50 years.
50 years. Without a spoken word, Rob?
I do as I'm told.
Good thinking. Happy wife, happy life.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about your travels. We'll start with you, Rob, because you've got a fifth wheeler, but you've been doing a lot of travelling, haven't you, both in Australia and overseas?
Yes, we lived in Sweden a long time and done a lot of travelling in Europe. Came back here and started house-sitting and doing travelling around, doing house-sitting. And then when COVID came, basically, we stopped that and bought this rig and have been travelling ever since. Probably we've done about 26,000 K around Australia and up and down a few other places. And now we're slowing down a bit because I'm slowing down a bit.
Okay. And is that because, Anna, you're keeping him on his heels and running him around the place?
I sure do.
The problem is the woman thinks I'm insured and she's trying to work me to death. But just between you and I, I'll try and do it quietly, I'm not insured.
You're not insured. Now, when I met you, you told me you were 85.
Correct.
And then a little bit later on, you said, I'm actually not 85, I'm just 37 and I've had a really, really busy life.
Yeah, well, when you look at me, I know you can't do this on radio, but I look really old. I could be taken for 85, but I'm really only 37. I was captured by Swedish gypsies.
Did you see that nose growing then?
Pinocchio. Oh, goodness me. So you've been married for 50 years, Anna. He's not really 37, though, is he?
No, he's not.
But he likes to think he's 37?
He does. He's slowing up, but for his age, it's just fantastic. Yep. What we're able to still do.
Yes.
And we love our life, what we're doing. and not sitting around waiting to die.
Yes.
It's a lot out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But lately we've been checking out a few crematoriums, okay, you know, to see how we're going with that.
I've got to explain that we'd be driving along and we pass a crematorium and she looks across and says, "Are you feeling okay?" She's got the theory that if she delivers, it'll be cheaper. But the worst part is that she's going to fill my clothes and me with uncooked popcorn.
Right.
Which will then turn the whole establishment white when I'm put in. And to rub salt into the wound, she says, "Well, you're dead. You're no good to me." Obviously, these people that run these things have got plenty of customers, so they're quite wealthy probably. So I've become a trade-in as well as entertainment.
That's what keeps him alive.
Fair enough. Now tell us about some of your travels, Rob. You've got a fifth wheelie here. How big is it?
It's 31.
31 foot, yeah.
And the Chevy that pulls it. It's an old rig, both are 2006.
Yep.
We're the third owners, as far as we know, and we've had it for 3.5 years. And then, as I said, about 25, 26,000 with it. The problem with that is I don't know how we're going to cope not doing it. Just stopped. It's going to be awkward because we're here for about 6 weeks now. We weren't planning it, but you start to get itchy feet.
Right.
And you want to move.
Yes.
Now, if we're stuck in some house, which the family say we should be.
Right.
I think I'll go crackers.
Go bananas.
Yeah.
So you're meant to be travelling.
Yes, at the moment.
Would you agree with that, Anna?
Yeah, no, I just love it. The change of scenery, the people we meet, the amazing sunsets and sunrises we get to see in all these places. It's will stay with you forever. We just love it.
Yeah, this place we're at now is one of the best, and we've, as you can understand, travelled a lot. But this has just everything you need. Beautiful sunsets. Look, something about looking out over water. It's something primeval probably or something. But it's a very pleasant place to be. We're surrounded by bush. There's kangaroos and wildlife. Okay, you got to drive for 20 minutes to go and get stores, but nothing. And it's just a peaceful, pleasant place.
So we should let the people listening in know where we are. So we are actually at Copeton Dam.
Correct. The north side.
North side?
Yeah, it's called North Shores.
Yeah,
North
Shores. It's a national park, as right, you probably saw when you come in through that rock work about
yes,
2 or 3 K back.
Yes, yes.
A ranger, Tom, which you probably met. A very nice guy.
And his security guard, and Ruby, the dog.
Oh, the little doggy, the four-legged security guard. Yes,
she's very good at her job.
Yep.
Yes.
Very good.
And again, part of this lifestyle is the people you meet. Okay, all of a sudden we met a version of Santa Claus.
Indeed.
With a microphone, which is probably...
And Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
What a combo.
So it's the combination of things when you're doing this lifestyle. And we've met people that we're still in touch with from 3 years ago.
That's the best part about it, isn't it, really? Because you meet so many lovely people.
Mm-hmm.
And you meet them on your travels, you stay in touch, and
yeah,
it could be years go by, and then you meet them again somewhere, and you think, oh, wow, I remember we met you wherever it was.
Correct. Yes, that happens. And even people say, well, look, where in so-and-so next month or something, where are you going to be? And we've actually not intentionally done it, but because our paths have crossed accidentally, I suppose you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another wonderful part of it. And sooner or later, I've got to stop, as I said, but I'm not looking forward to it, actually.
No. So I guess the beauty of this rig that you've got, though, it is big enough for you to live in. You've been living in it on the road, travelling.
Yes. Yep.
And if you did have to park it up for some reason, you couldn't actually tow anymore because they took away your licence or something, you can live in this unit.
Yep.
So I guess you've got it covered in that way. But
well, that's plan 287B12, that we'll find a bit of dirt, have this, plus an attachment of some sort. So that's hopefully long term.
The thing with this, you've been here now for like about 4 or 5 weeks, and when I came past here the other day just wandering by, you've really made this your home, haven't you, Anna? Because you've got out the front lights, flowers. Tell us about that.
Well, because we don't have a permanent place, wherever we go, I always try to make it as homely as possible. And yes, it's a nuisance sometimes carrying all your pot plants, but the shower recess is big enough to do that. But we always like to make our camp as homely and pleasant as possible. And that gives other people enjoyment going past as well. So it's just a habit that we got in to do. And it works. People love it.
We have been referred to as Luna Park at times.
Well, I actually thought when I walked past yesterday that you were permanent residents here, because you've got table and chairs out the front under your awning, and you've got solar lights set up along the pathway, your driveway coming in, and pot plants, and it looked like you were going to live here. This was going to be where you were staying.
It's absolutely right. And some people think you're crazy, but we like this, and it's enjoyable. And when we have friends arriving, or people we meet in the park, often come up and have a cup of tea, dinner, drinks. It's all perfect.
Well, I noticed yesterday also you said to me that you've got out the front here, there's a barbecue, which is one of the facilities within the park. But you said you had some flowers down there on the table and making it...
Full-on dinner set up with serviettes, placemats, the whole thing, and flowers, bottle of wine, and a view over a dam that is just fantastic.
Yeah, and that's apparently one of the vantage points for getting sunsets and photographs.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a magnificent place. Now, how did you trip over this one?
I think we saw it on the net.
We saw it on the net.
And then we were in Armidale.
And other travellers.
Oh, and someone else recommended it. So we hopped in the car and came up here to have a look. Basically on the way to Moree to have spa thing, just in the car, and drove in here because, as I said to you earlier, this big rig, and we've got to have a place that the slide-outs can fit, and swing room. So this was perfect, and it remains perfect.
Well, it's the easy part about this one is you can just drive straight in and straight out, can't you? There's no backing, there's no turning, there's no manoeuvring. It's just straight in, straight out, and you got probably the best view in the park.
Correct.
And do you intend to come back again?
Absolutely.
When's that likely to be, Anna?
End of March. So we'll have Easter here next year. And we can only stay 50 days, but bribery may be longer.
So you're hoping to stay a little bit longer?
Oh, it would be fantastic.
If you could, yes. Yeah. Well, I'm sure Tom's a very obliging man.
He's coming for dinner.
He's coming for dinner?
Yes.
When's that?
On the weekend.
On the weekend?
And that's when the bribery starts.
and the fact that a lot of people call her the commandant in various caravan parks we've been in.
Why is that? Why is that, Rob?
I wouldn't say that she would be assertive and bossy. I would never say things like that. I don't understand how they get the word commandant. I think just because she was educated by Attila the Hun may have been one of the reasons. I'm not sure.
I think it's more likely that the blonde hair and the Marilyn Monroe eyes and the way she bats them at everybody, she gets around them that way.
I'm too old for the wet T-shirt competition now, but it used to work. It used to work there.
Fair enough.
I think Tom is enjoying that someone is staying a bit longer as well, because it's sort of a safeguard for him that we look after this corner, and that's why I get the nickname Commandant. If I think things are not right in toilets or I'll report into them, because it's a huge area for him to cover. And it's also in this place, it's wonderful walking paths that are all lit up at night. So you have the choice of that. And that's very pleasant. But there's a big ground for him to keep an eye on. So I think he enjoys it that someone else have a look out for this.
The thing is, they've also got a fabulous cafe here as well. Now, are you a really good cook, Anna?
Well, I used to have a restaurant for 16 years.
So why don't you take over the kiosk? It's not been open this week, has it?
No, it's a bit slow. She's at the moment covering for her parents that's been travelling, and she has another two places in town, as far as I know, and not enough business this time of the year. But when it's warmer, and this park is very busy then, a lot of people come out just for the day, and obviously this shop is set up for that. But I have hinted that I could give her a hand next year.
She's actually a chef.
A chef, a qualified chef. So yeah. I'm sure you've got a job here next year. And 50 days will be just not on the bill. That's part of the contract.
Well, if you could see me through the microphone, I used to be a jockey when I met her, and look what happened. That's how good her food is.
You grew a foot and a half and put
mainly
on a few
mainly sideways.
Okay. So what do you think people should expect when they come out here? They've got this fabulous dam or the lake, or it's a lake, isn't it?
Yeah, or dam.
Copeton Dam. It's all the big walls over there in the distance, you can see.
Built in the 70s. There was an actual town, which is now under, but they moved all the houses. There's two cemeteries, which
underwater.
Is also underwater, but there's plaques on these walks that you do that you can see all the names, which is really nice. The fishing ramp is supposedly the longest in the southern hemisphere. So as the lake, if it drops down in water, it just keeps going, and it's like a runway. It's huge.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if the water drops, they can still put their boats in and out.
Yeah, apparently that's what it is. And there are apparently a lot of fish there, carp, murray...
Not carp.
Murray cod,
yellow belly, and silver perch.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
And you're not a fisherman yourself, Rob?
No.
We have cans of tuna here, that's fine.
I've been fishing a lot. We've got lots of children and grandchildren, and basically my job is untangling line and putting bait on hooks. Very rarely got to fish myself.
Fish yourself, fair enough. Well, you've got a great view. If you're not interested in fishing, we're just sitting here now looking out at your view, and it's absolutely breathtaking.
You'll
be seeing the sunsets from in here too as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Beautiful.
It is good. The next thing to mention is that the playground is what you call a water park, not on this time of the winter, but in the summer. It'd be absolutely fantastic to bring kids here, and it's all the water park, and they can play. Well designed, well organized facilities, all new showers, laundry, toilets, excellent. The water is good for showering and washing up, but you have extra rainwater for drinking. It has a stain in it, which all dams do. You could drink it, but you know, the rainwater is there for you to access if you have to.
So they've pretty much got everything here. And what about the prices, Anna? Tell us about the prices.
Well, at the moment we're paying $20 a night, and what you get for $20 and a view like this. We've been to some places where you pay over $100 a night and you can't see anything.
No.
Absolutely
not.
It's certainly not a greedy thing here at all. There's day visits, you pay $5 if you're a visitor coming in, which is value for money again, because all the barbecues, all the areas that you can sit and be part of.
Oh, it's a national park requirement
to
come in.
It's just delightful. And waking up and you see a kangaroo virtually looking through your window, and the fire pits that they have supplied, and firewood that you buy for $15 a bag. I mean, you can go and pick up loose stuff on the ground. But otherwise you're supporting someone obviously cutting the firewood as well. So it's well maintained with these sort of things.
And the fire pits are huge.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge.
I would say all our travels over the last 4 or 5 years in total here in Australia, this would be damn close to the best we've been as a caravan park for all the reasons that we've discussed.
So you definitely recommend this to fellow travellers?
Yeah,
absolutely.
We do. We both love Western Australia, a different concept altogether. But as far as the East Coast, this is way up here. 10 out of 10, we feel, at the moment.
I wouldn't recommend it because that will make people come here and crowd us out.
Yes, I was about to say that's exactly what it may do. But the thing is, you book well enough in advance, you'll get the site you want.
Absolutely, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
I feel I'm shooting myself in the foot here at a minute, but that's okay.
All right, well, it might be a good idea for us to wind this up now, I think. What do you think? Yeah, before you shoot yourself in the other foot.
Yeah.
Yes, because our interviewer, he might get into the beer and wine shortly, and that's when we shouldn't be talking.
That's a great idea. Well, we're going to wind it up now. Thank you so much, Anna, for taking the time. And you, Rob?
Pleasure.
And thank you for finding us.
Good to meet you, apart from anything else.
And you both. Now, before we complete this interview, we're going to play a song for you. It's got to be Australian. Let's ask the lady. Ladies before gentlemen. Do you have a favourite, Anna?
Well, at the moment, I have a favourite, yes, that I was introduced by a lovely lady, which was in her late 80s, 90s, and she had travelled a lot in Australia and very fond of Australian bush songs. And she introduced us to this album called The Rusty Old Ute, and the singer is John O'Day. And the song that I like, which is very sad but a good story, and it's called Woman from Saigon.
Woman from Saigon. We're going to put that on right now. Thank you so much, Rob, for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you.
Well, it's been fun. It's been a pleasure for us.
Yeah.
And you too, Anna.
You stay safe out there, all you travellers. Get out there and enjoy it.
Before you're too old too.
Absolutely. Mm.
The first step is the biggest, but take it.
We're going to be back with more of Roman Oz listeners straight after John O'Day's Woman from Saigon. Thank you both.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Met her in Saigon when the war was nearly done. Said she loved the water. He said, I know just the place. A shack among some gum trees on the banks of the Murrumbidgee. I know we could be happy. Would you be my wife? She said, I can't have children. That never bothered him. She knew he adored her. She said, yes, I'll be your wife. She came, she loved the river. She walked it every morning. For years they shared its waters as husband and wife. Found her clothes on the riverbank, shoes at the water's edge. The headlines in the paper read, where's the woman from Saigon? Searched the river and all around it. To this day they've never found it. He wishes he could change it. He never went that day. He said, oh, you Murrumbidgee, why'd you take her from me? We used to share your waters. Why'd you take her away? I don't understand your reasons. Why you'd want to keep her? Why you couldn't share her? Why'd you take her away? Now he sits on the riverbank. Memories come flooding back. The happy days of peaceful ways. The tears roll down his face. He'd lost mates in Vietnam. He'd seen the bloodshed of the war. But nothing compares to this pain. You won't see her anymore. Now an eerie silence hangs across the river. He knows her spirit's out there. He can feel it in the wind. He said, oh, you Murrumbidgee, why'd you take her from me? We used to share your waters. Why'd you take her away? I don't understand your reasons. Why you'd want to keep her? Why you couldn't share her? Why'd you take her away?
by the glow of a lamp. He still walks the river, carrying her picture. Where's the woman from Saigon?
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.